A Russian soldier pleads guilty to killing a civilian in the first war crimes trial since the invasion of Ukraine. Meanwhile, the Russian economy reels from the initial impact of international sanctions. Traffic congestion in Metro Manila expected to return to pre-pandemic levels next month. And a new climate report again sounds the alarm on the effects of climate change. Later on in the program, we will speak with Secretary Robert Borges. He is vice chairperson of the Climate Change Commission on how the next Philippine government can tackle this problem. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. Topping the midday news, a 21-year-old Russian soldier pleads guilty to killing a Ukrainian civilian in the first war crimes trial since Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The soldier, who is expected to be the first of many prosecuted by Ukraine, admitted to shooting dead a 62-year-old man on a bicycle 4 days into the invasion. He faces a life sentence after his guilty plea. Ukraine's prosecutor general says the trial sends a clear signal. Every person who ordered or assisted in the commission of crimes in the country will be held accountable. The International Criminal Court is also investigating Russia's alleged war crimes. The United States is confident Finland and Sweden will become part of the NATO alliance despite Turkey's vocal opposition. On Wednesday, the Nordic nations formally submitted a joint application to join the military alliance. The accession bid faces stiff resistance from NATO member Turkey, which accuses the Nordic neighbors of harboring anti-Turkish extremists. But Western allies and NATO's chief remain optimistic they can overcome Turkey's objections.
All allies agree on the importance of NATO enlargement. We all agree that we must stand together. And we all agree that this is an historic moment which we must seize.
Russia's economic growth slows in the first quarter of the year as the initial impact of sanctions against President Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine unfolds. The Russian economy expanded 3.5% in the first 3 months of 2022 after growing 5% in the previous quarter. It's also below the 3.7% growth forecast of economists. The first quarter is expected to be the last with sound growth as Russia takes a hit from sweeping sanctions. Those sanctions, which hit major financial institutions and prompted an exodus of foreign firms, are expected to trigger a deep recession in Russia, with the economy contracting as much as 10% this year. A health expert expects COVID-19 cases to rise in the Philippines after the detection of a more infectious Omicron sub-variant. Dr. Ronji Insulante says the expected uptick may be seen in areas with low vaccination rates, but he believes it will not overwhelm the country's hospitals.
Vulnerable ang population natin, especially for those na wala talagang bakuna, kung doon sa may mga bakuna, especially for those getting booster. So there's a possibility, no? Malaking posibilidad yan na medyo tataas ang mga kaso. But I don't think it will be enough to affect our hospitalization rate.
U.S. health officials are considering extending the eligibility for a second COVID booster dose to people under 50. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said they are in talks with the Food and Drug Administration regarding the possible expansion of the booster drive. That's as the number of cases nationwide over the past month increased threefold. The CDC said the average number of daily cases rose by 26% to about 94,000 cases per day. The seven-day average for hospitalizations also increased to 3,000 per day. The U.S. reports its first case of the monkeypox virus after a string of new cases popped up in Europe. The Massachusetts Department of Public Health confirmed Wednesday a man who recently traveled to Canada was infected with a virus. It said the patient has been hospitalized and is in good condition and does not pose a risk to the public. Authorities are looking into whether this is connected to small outbreaks in Europe. Spain and Portugal have detected around 30 suspected cases of monkeypox, while confirmed cases in the UK have climbed to 9. The World Health Organization said it was coordinating with the UK to investigate the outbreak.
Well, what we're looking at here is a number of studies that are ongoing to better understand, number one, the extent of circulation of monkeypox in London among communities with men, of sex with men, and making sure that testing is occurring, that isolation of men or people who are suspected of having monkeypox are isolated and that they receive the appropriate clinical care.
In other news, U.S. investigators believe the crashing of the China Eastern flight last March 21st, killing all its 132 passengers and crew, was deliberately done by someone on board. The flight data recorders had been sent to the U.S. for analysis. Citing people familiar with the probe, the Wall Street Journal reports the data showed someone input orders on the controls to send the Boeing jet into a nosedive. U.S. officials believe their conclusion is backed up by the fact that Chinese investigators have so far not indicated any problems with the aircraft or flight controls. U.S. and Boeing officials, however, have declined to comment on the report. The plane was traveling from Kunming in Guangzhou when it inexplicably plunged into a mountainside in what is China's deadliest crash, or in what has become to know what is China's deadliest crash in around 30 years. Another group has asked the Supreme Court to block the looming electoral victory of presidential race frontrunner Ferdinand Marcos Jr. A petition for certiorari was filed by the group Karma, or the campaign against the return of the Marcoses and martial law. It claims the Election Commission gravely abused its discretion when it junked the group's disqualification case against Marcos. Karma also asked the High Court to stop Congress from canvassing the votes for Marcos. The petitioners want Marcos's rival, Vice President Lenny Robredo, to be declared the winner.
If you look at the Constitution, it is very clear that the process of succession, the Vice President or the Senate President or the Speaker of the House, as it may be, depends on the process of succession, only replaces when there is death, resignation, and or I think disability is the other one. But there was no mention of disqualification, because at the very start, there should be replacing a duly elected president. If you are disqualified, you are never and will never be a duly elected president from the very start. So that would not cure, even your oath will not cure your being a president or being a valid president.
Karma had sought to disqualify Marcos on the basis of his 1995 tax conviction, but COMELEC affirmed its decision to dismiss the case last week. Marcos's spokesperson says, while it is understandable the petitioners want to exhaust all legal remedies, their chances for success are slim. The Senate now officially has 12 new members. The 12 winning bets from the May 9 elections were proclaimed Wednesday. Topping the senatorial race was actor Robin Padilla, followed by returning Senator Lauren Legarda and TV personality Raffy Tulfo.
Ang akin pong pagkapanalo ay isa pong simbolo ng pagkakaisa ng mga Muslim at Kristiyano. Halos umabot po ang 30 taon. Wala pong Muslim na naging senador.
Rounding out the so-called Magic 12 or re-election, it's Sherwin Gachalian, Francis Chis Escudero, Mark Villar, Alan Peter Cayetano, Miguel Zubiri, Joel Villanueva, J.V. Ejercito, lone opposition Senator Risa Ontiveros, and Jingoy Estrada.
At asahan po ninyo sa loob ng 6 na taon ang aking mga ipinangako sa taong bayan noong panahon ng kampanya, lalong-lalo na po ang pagbibigay ng trabaho sa ating mga Pilipino na walang trabaho ay maisa sa katuparan.
A strong, independent Senate that will help Malacanang when it needs help, but will also correct and fiscalize when they have to be told that something is wrong, is what our country needs now.
Senator-elect Raffy Tulfo will push for decriminalizing libel at the upper chamber, but Tulfo, whose brother Ramon was arrested Wednesday over cyber libel charges, clarifies it is not his top priority. He says his main concern is to help the poor.
Depende yan kung paano mo i-handle yung batas na iyong papanukala, paano mo ma-explain yan sa iyong mga kasamahan, lalo na ako sa Senado. Sabi ko, gusto ko mapunta sa majority para isa-isa sila po silang kausapin. Mas madali ako maintindihan na mga kapwa ko mababata sa Senado because they know what I'm talking about. Alam nila na I'm talking from experience.
Meanwhile, Tulfo says he will continue his popular online public service show while working at the Senate. President Rodrigo Duterte has appointed 2 new associate justices of the Court of Appeals. The new appointees are John Zurbito Lee and Eleuterio Larisma Batan. Lee and Batan will assume the post vacated by Associate Justice Japar Dimaambao, who was appointed as an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court, and Associate Justice Dorothy Montejo Gonzaga. Malacañang expressed confidence Lee and Batan will dispense justice with fairness, impartiality, and integrity. A number of anti-drug agents and policemen have been charged over the deadly misencounter along Commonwealth Avenue in Quezon City last year. Mike Navallo now joins us with details. Mike?
Terminal 3 agents of the Philippine Drug Enforcement Agency will face a homicide charge for 4 cops to be charged with direct assault over a drug operation in Commonwealth Quezon City in February last year that ended in a misencounter between today and police operatives, leaving 4 people dead. DOJ prosecutors will charge today agents Tima Ricardo-Rodas, Jeffrey Bagidudol, Angelo Satinyaman with homicide for the death of Police Corporal Eric Alvin Garado. Garado was the first to fall to the ground during the shootout between police and today agents at the parking lot of a food chain. Another cop, Police Corporal Lauro de Guzman, and today agent Rankin Gano also died in the shootout. However, the homicide complaints over the deaths of de Guzman and Gano were dismissed because of lack of evidence. The firearm and caliber used to shoot de Guzman was not identified, according to the DOJ, and none of the bullets or spent cartridges recovered from the crime scene matched the alleged shooter, today agent Romeo Asuncion. There was also no record showing Police Corporal Alvin Bora shot today agent Gano, and neither did the medical legal report and ballistics exam conducted by the National Bureau of Investigation identify the fatal shot. But prosecutors found sufficient evidence to charge 4 police officers, Police Corporal Paul Christian Gandeza, Police Lieutenant Hany Besas, Police Major Sandy Caparoso, and Police Senior Master Sergeant Melvin Merida with direct assault for hitting, striking, and mauling today agents who responded to the scene. Meanwhile, other complaints for attempted homicide, falsification of official documents, robbery, conniving to or consenting to evasion, arbitrary detention, sedition, and violation of the Anti-Torture Act were all dismissed for insufficiency of evidence. There was no mention about the 4th casualty, the today informant who also died during the operation. It appears from the investigation that both today and TMP's Quezon City Police District Special Operation Unit both conducted separate bypass operations along Commonwealth Avenue, Quezon City on February 24, 2021. But their respective informants allegedly intertwined the operations of the 2 agencies. The charges will be filed in a Quezon City court. Amina?
Thanks a lot. Mike Navallo there joining us on the line. We're going to take a short break now. When we return, we'll speak with Robert Borge of the Climate Change Commission on the next administration's climate agenda. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on AMC. And we're back. We're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. A Russian soldier pleads guilty to killing a civilian in the first war crimes trial since the invasion of Ukraine. Meanwhile, the Russian economy reels from the initial impact of international sanctions. Traffic congestion in Metro Manila expected to return to pre-pandemic levels next month. And a new climate report again sounds the alarm on the effects of climate change. Back with more news. Traffic congestion in Metro Manila is seen to worsen next month. Latest data shows some 400,000 vehicles are using the main roads in the National Capital Region, but authorities say that figure may rise to pre-pandemic levels when more schools implement face-to-face classes.
Wala pa pong paso. So kung magkakaroon po ng face-to-face classes ngayong Hunyo, I expect po natin na mas marami pa at mukhang mabibridge po yung 405,000 na pre-pandemic level. Considering po na napakarami rin po noong 2 years na may pandemic, siguro po more or less mga kalahating milyon ang nadagdag na sasakyan sa lansangan noong 2 years period po na yan. So 60 to 70% naman po yan ay pumapasok sa Metro Manila or naandito sa Metro Manila.
The Metropolitan Manila Development Authority now pushing for the implementation of the modified number coding scheme and adjusted government office working hours to ease the traffic. Well, hundreds took part in a solidarity march in Coronadal City in South Cotabato to protest the lifting of the ban on open pit mining there. Our very own Chat Ansaga now joins us with that story. Chat?
Yes, Carmina. Hundreds gather for a solidarity march in Coronadal City to make an appeal to uphold the ban on open pit mining in South Cotabato. At 9 a.m. today, people from various organizations in the academe, some activists, and parishioners in Region 12 marched from Christ the King Cathedral in Coronadal to the provincial capital of South Cotabato. Here, they held a short program to ask Governor Reynaldo Tamayo Jr. to veto the move of the provincial board that unanimously approved the lifting of the ban on open pit mining during the session last Monday, May 16, 2022. And while the program was being held outside the capital, Bishop Casicas and Governor Tamayo had a closed-door meeting. Casicas refused to release a statement after the meeting. The governor, however, said that the LGU is going to create a technical working group before making a decision. Pro-mining groups also appeared before the governor. Domingo Amay Collado, the head of Indigenous People Mandatory Representative of Tampakan, which is the proposed site of the mining, wanted that the mine project will pursue. He pointed out some of the benefits that they are enjoying, such as scholarships and other social development programs. This is aside from the employment to be generated once the project begins. On the other hand, the president of South Cotabato Irrigators, Teodorico Fadrigo Jr., insists that the open pit mining must not be allowed. In fact, tomorrow, the Federation will submit their position of paper to the governor along with other members of the Irrigators Federation. The $5.9 billion U.S. dollars Tampakan copper gold mine project started in 1995. The consent of the LGU is a requirement for the issuance of declaration of mining project feasibility before a mining operation can begin. Chat Ansaga, ABS-CBN News, Coronadal City, South Cotabato.
Thanks a lot, Chat. And back here in the newsroom, a new climate report again sounding the alarm over the devastating effects of climate change. The World Meteorological Organization warned 4 key climate change indicators have set new records in 2021. Those indicators are greenhouse gas concentrations, sea level rise, ocean heat, and ocean acidification. The report said melting ice sheets fueled by global warming had helped push sea levels to new heights in 2021. Following the release of the report, UN Chief Antonio Guterres called on world leaders to act swiftly as time is running out.
The global energy system is broken and bringing us ever closer to climate catastrophe. Fossil fuels are a dead end, environmentally and economically. The war in Ukraine and its immediate effects on energy prices is yet another wake-up call. The only sustainable future is a renewable one. We must end fossil fuel pollution and accelerate the renewable energy transition before we incinerate our only home. Time is running out. To keep 1.5 alive and prevent the worst impacts of the climate crisis, the world must act in this decade.
Well, there is no doubt the next administration will face a litany of problems once the turnover of power happens on June 30th. One of those issues, which was hardly tackled during the campaign period, is climate change. And joining us now to discuss how the next administration's climate agenda will look like is Secretary Robert Borge. He is Vice Chairperson of the Climate Change Commission. Secretary, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Fermina, and I'm happy to be here on ANC.
All right, let me cut to the chase here. When your appointment was announced, it is no secret that many have questioned your appointment as Vice Chair of the Climate Change Commission, questioning your ability to lead since the position entails at least a decade's experience in climate change. How will you lead the commission given your lack of experience, Secretary?
Thank you very much. And I'd like to address that squarely regarding lack of experience. I am a career diplomat with close to 20 years of work on both bilateral and multilateral issues. So that includes climate change, of course. And being a career diplomat, we have been steeped in not only negotiations, but preparations, coordination, and policy formulation with regards to climate change. While I was Presidential Assistant on Foreign Affairs, that gave me another opportunity to work on this particular portfolio. And that has provided me greater insight and also experience in working with different sectors, not only in the Philippines, but also with our other stakeholders in international community. I think what's important to understand also is that with the appointment of President Duterte, we have a new commission that's been constituted. And we all have different things that we bring to the table. My colleague, Commissioner Herrera, has experience in legislation, and we're working very hard on our final 100 days and first 100 days. This is the legacy setting and our policy recommendations for the incoming administration. At the same time, one of my colleagues is involved in the HSUD in housing, and he has extensive experience as well in LGUs. And this figures into the strategies of the new Climate Change Commission on how to engage our different stakeholders.
Which we're going to talk more about later on. So basically, you're saying you're not going into this blindly. You have what it takes to lead the commission, Secretary.
Not at all. I think we have to respect the process of our government. A little trust and confidence is needed because we have gone through the process. But if I may just say, we did hit the ground running already a few weeks into our term. Our Climate Change Commission has already worked with Masantol for a case study on the impacts of climate change on a particular community. Apart from that, I was able to proceed to Japan to work on the Asia-Pacific Water Summit, where we made it clear to the international community that what's important is not just assistance or finance assistance to developing countries, but must be unlocked very clearly. I was also given the opportunity to speak with former Secretary General of the United Nations, Ban Ki-moon, and we had an extensive discussion on the problems that are being faced by the international community and what needs to be done. I think as a career diplomat, it's vital that I bring to the table not just the network, but the experience on UNFCCC and, of course, the dynamics between different countries.
Having said that, though, sorry to cut you there, Secretary Borge, but having said all of that, you know, climate change, the climate emergency, this climate crisis that we're currently in, that still remains to be not a gut issue for many Filipinos. Having said that, what is your vision for the commission? How will you make this an issue that every single Filipino must care about? And not just that, but actually act upon. Secretary.
Thank you. This was our message in Masantol, and we took the effort together with the climate change, our chair designate, Secretary Dominguez, to reach out to people, our stakeholders, particularly LGUs. And you are correct. We would have to say in Filipino language, it's malayo sa bituka. People know that disasters are happening, and people know that it's attributable to climate change drivers. But for some reason, they're unable to connect that directly with climate change. So that is an important part of our mandate, which is mainstreaming climate change. What we have in the climate change community now is a three-pronged approach. Number one, we have policies that will increase our resiliency as a country and will provide opportunities for our country to become more resilient through financing. Number two, programs and projects, which would be necessary not only at the national level, but also implemented on the ground so that our stakeholders, particularly the LGU chief executives, will have a buy-in into these important projects that ultimately will affect our people in the local communities. And third is promotion. And when we say promotion, it's not only informing or communicating with our stakeholders here in the Philippines, but also our stakeholders abroad when we need to stand up, when we need to be very principled in our promotion, in our principles on climate change. We need to do that with candor, and we need to do that with positive engagement. And this is what the new commission wants to do. All these three P's, policies, programs and projects, and promotion.
Let me just focus now on the second point that you made, which is that the local chief executive's buy-in is important. But really now, Secretary, shouldn't all these actions really emanate from them? Because they would know their community well, or at least they should, right? They should be able to capacitate their communities. They should have to. They should have that ability to see how the climate crisis really affects their community. Why should there be a buy-in from them when this all should emanate from them as well?
You make an important point, but governance is not just LGU. Governance has to be a partnership between the national government and the local government units. There are reasons why certain local chief executives choose to prioritize certain items, and we are not there to criticize them for that. But it is incumbent upon the national government, particularly through the Climate Change Commission, and we are partnering with the DILG, to make our stakeholders really realize how important it is, not just the buy-in, but actual action. In fact, when I was, during my first week as a climate change commissioner, I immediately checked on the People Survival Fund. And while it showed that there is a utility rate of about 30%, it still shows that the 1 billion peso fund for climate change adaptation is largely unused. And I had a very candid talk with my team, and I said, it only this development points to two things. And I will be very candid with the public because the public needs to know. Number one, either we're making it very difficult for our stakeholders, the LGUs, to access climate financing, or number two, which is even worse, they do not realize or they do not recognize that climate change is a problem. Mm-hmm. Either way, this is wrong and something needs to be done. So again, in our first 100 days and final 100 days recommendations, we are going to improve on accessibility for People Survival Fund. If the Philippines goes to the international community demanding that they unlock climate financing for developing countries, it should be the same for the Philippines to its stakeholders. They need all the support that they can get. And if it needs to simplify the streams for financing, we will need to do that.
Uh-huh. All right. So before we get into climate finance, because that's very important to talk about as well, I just want to focus now on the gains made under the Duterte administration. You mentioned Secretary Dominguez a while ago. He has done a lot. And tell us how you will build on these gains that he was able to make under this administration as Secretary of Finance.
Thank you very much. I think that Secretary Dominguez has to take credit for a lot of the gains. And the focus on financing has been very important. But more than the focus on financing, Carmina, I think is the message of the president. President Duterte has time and time again emphasized that at the core of climate change adaptation, that the core of climate change mitigation is the principle of climate justice. And what do we say? What we mean by climate justice is that to those who are least responsible, like the Philippines, least responsible for climate change, we contribute less than 0.5% of greenhouse gas emissions. To those least responsible for climate change, to those who are suffering the most, to those with the least resources, to those who are most vulnerable, we need to do more. It's the same thing for the national government, and it's the same clarion call that we have for the international community. Now, Secretary Dominguez, and I would like to say other government agencies have done their part. But the normative or the framework setting is important, because without climate financing, it would be very difficult for us to go through the transition to a greener economy. And why do we say this? We bear the brunt of climate change. For the Philippines, for the series of typhoons that we have had, the estimate is 1.6 billion pesos in damages. And this translates, Carmina, effectively about 55% of our national budget for health insurance for our people, affecting around 60% of our population. So it is a very urgent issue. We are doing what we can. We can do more, of course, but we cannot do it alone. And this is our message to the international community. You cannot demand upon developing countries such high demands when we are in our development phase, while other countries, now there's just a report from The Guardian, that there are several developed countries that are in fact investing in coal and in traditional energy sources. This simply is not right. And the Philippine government and the Filipino people rightly should not take this sitting down. And this is what we will be doing. And we know that President-elect, the presumptive president, has been very strong on climate change. Mm-hmm. He is very well aware about renewable energies. And we also know that in the new Senate, we have several champions. So right now, I think we have the building blocks of a stronger action, a stronger edifice, if you may say so, for the Philippines to become resilient against climate change. Mm-hmm. It takes leadership. And we believe that the people have spoken, and through the presumptive president, he will be able to lay out his policies. But the Climate Change Commission will be there to assist, to provide recommendations, and to give further context so that policies can be formulated and implemented accordingly.
Talking about all those leadership policies and the formulation of such, do you think that the changes in policies and paradigms have been institutionalized under this administration, so much so that the next finance secretary, for example, and the other LGUs, those who just won the elections, would have no choice but to really just follow through because the groundwork has been laid before them?
Thank you, Carmina. You raise a very interesting question, and I may be biased. But again, as a career diplomat, it's important, and this is what I've learned in governance, that the civil service, the career officials, are there to ensure precisely that there is continuity in policies. On a strategic issue such as climate change, I believe that the groundwork has been there. And more than that, I think there is a recognition from our national leaders that climate change is indeed an important issue, a cross-cutting issue, an integrated issue that needs to be addressed through a whole-of-government approach. Of course, the president sits as chair of the Climate Change Commission, and there's a reason for that, because basically we're saying that the president or his chair designate has a complete say, has direction, and will be able to do so very quickly, because climate change is recognized as an important issue that must be addressed, not today, but actually tomorrow. Not today, but yesterday. They say that the clock is ticking. We're looking at 2030 and 2050. There's a recent study now that effects of climate change will happen much earlier. So we have to work on this with a greater sense of urgency. Mm-hmm. And I believe that our elected officials do have that sense of urgency.
Secretary Borja, you did mention a while ago at the beginning of this interview that you were all actually part of some negotiations, particularly involving climate change. What do you think about loss and damage? And should that be pursued, especially given the context of the Philippines and especially given the situation of the Philippines?
The President Duterte has actually been very bold in his ideas. If you remember one time, President Duterte said there should be compensation for countries due to climate change impacts. And that's very bold. And it's something that's not said and not discussed in negotiations. What people are looking at is climate finance. Mm-hmm. This is something that I think the next administration would want to consider. if not as a policy, but also as a negotiating strategy. Because indeed, compensation is important because we're least responsible. Again, it goes into the key issue of climate justice. We will have to work hard, and I think there's readiness on the part of the Philippine government. In the recent meeting on loss and damage, the Philippines also made the position that we need to unlock climate change. We need to streamline the processes. The problem is, first, there is a announcement from the developed world that they will have X number of commitment, X billion dollars. It's $100 billion. The question is, where is it now?
Mm-hmm.
It is there, but it's difficult to access.
Mm.
So what we're saying is this really a commitment towards the realization of objectives, but just a commitment to fund, but not to implement projects?
Mm.
And this is where the Philippines is coming hard on. When we go meet our colleagues, when we go to the different meetings, this is where the message is coming from. And we will continue to do that as we should, because it's not just the Philippines that's experiencing all this. It's the developing world. And what we want, Carmina, is not a handout. It's not a dole out. What
Correct.
We want is a responsible partnership, which at the very outset, the problem has been the result of irresponsible behavior by developed economies.
Well, Secretary Boria, that's about our relationship to the outside world, that concerns the outside world. But here at home, things are moving. Let's talk about the Mandanas-Garcia ruling. Do you see this as a possible game changer? And are you confident that this sort of won't go the way of the PSF, the People's Survival Fund, that local chief executives will use the tremendous amount of money that they will have beginning this fiscal year and put that those monies into projects that will benefit the people? And we're talking about climate projects as well that would ultimately lead to what, as you said, climate justice, Secretary.
Again, that's a very important point that you make. But again, we have to take a whole-of-nation approach. It cannot be just the LGUs. It cannot be just the national government. We do have to work in tandem, also together with civil society. Now, the Mandanas ruling is very important because it does unlock budget and financing for our LGUs. But what's equally important is that they recognize our local government chief executives recognize that more needs to be done when it comes to climate change adaptation and mitigation. And they are doing that. We have our measures and monitoring in place, but more needs to be done. The question here is when it comes to PSF, and I would have to clarify this a bit, it's still something that can provide further support for our LGUs. And that's what that's why our, the Climate Change Commission is strengthening our partnership with the ALG and LGUs, because it's meant to be supplementary in nature. It's not going to be the main funding for climate change adaptation for LGUs, but it's going to supplementary in nature. So our LGU chief executives, now that they've been elected, will need to know about this too. They also need to know about the Mandanas ruling so that they can set their priorities priorities on climate change and disaster risk reduction. And I would like to add on your point, maybe it's not just the Mandanas ruling. Maybe our local chief executives also need to appreciate the importance of the OPOSA doctrine in the case, because it clearly shows that our government has an intergenerational responsibility. And climate change is that. We are responsible for the next generation. If we do not act on the needs of these times, then we will never have a nation, a region, or a world where we can live in productively and responsibly. So I would argue, Carmina, that apart from the Mandanas ruling, apart from the political will that's important, not just at the national level, but at the local level, it's important also that we understand the mandate reposed upon us, not just the leaders, but maybe as a nation, because we do have that responsibility to our posterity.
Secretary Robert Borges, their Vice Chair of the Climate Change Commission, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it, considering that, you know, in less than 24 hours ago, I think you were just on a special mission to the UAE, conveying your condolences there. So really appreciate you coming to the show. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And we will continue to be available to you, Carmina, and to my former colleagues at ABS-CBN whenever you need an interview. Thank you.
Really appreciate it. And back here in the newsroom, let's move now to some business news. The Philippine Central Bank drops a hint on its monetary policy direction ahead of its rate-setting meeting this afternoon. Let's get details now from Warren de Guzman.
Philippine Central Bank Governor Ben Jokno has always been vocal on monetary policy, with the goal of making sure financial markets are never caught off guard when it comes to interest rates and policy adjustments. On Wednesday, a day before the third rate-setting meeting of 2022, Jokno dropped another big hint.
There is space for maintaining an accommodative policy stance has considerably narrowed given how the April 2022 inflation of 4.9% settled near the higher end of the BSP's forecast range of 4.2 to 5%. Inflation pressures in recent months have been linked mainly to supply-side factors, which we argue are still best addressed by targeted non-monetary interventions by the national government. Meanwhile, second-round effects are starting to manifest. The recent approval of the wage hikes in the National Capital Region and Western Visayas leaves the door open for further increases in other regions, as wage petitions were deferred since 2020 as the pandemic disrupted economic activities. At the same time, the Philippine economy exceeded expectations after growing by 8.3% in the first quarter.
Sure enough, after the minimum wage hikes for the National Capital Region and Western Visayas, another round was announced for the Ilocos, Cagayan Valley, and Caraga regions. These second-round effects could in turn stoke inflation further as they add to the cost of production. Jokno, however, also noted that there are some headwinds facing the economic recovery, which could give pause to plans for normalizing policy settings from the record low interest rates and historic accommodative measures put in place to boost the economy during the pandemic. Jokno says whatever the decision will be, it will be done in an orderly manner.
While spillovers from the Ukraine-Russia conflict will likely be limited, given our weak economic linkages with the two countries, slower growth in the global economy and higher commodity prices are headwinds to the Philippines' young economic recovery.
Currently, the central bank expects inflation to average 4.3% this year, above the preferred range of 2 to 4%, before easing to 3.6% in 2023. That outlook will be updated during Thursday's Monetary Board meeting. The Monetary Board's decision will be made known in a press conference at 3 p.m. Thursday afternoon. Warren de Guzman, ABS-CBN News.
The scheduled hike in rates at the Manila-Cavite Toll Expressway, or Cavitex, has been deferred to May 22. The hike was supposed to take effect last May 12, but the Cavitex Infrastructure Corporation says they decided to move it to a later date to give drivers and operators of public utility vehicles more time to register for the toll reprieve program. This would allow them to pay the price of the old toll rates of 25 pesos for Class 1 vehicles and 50 pesos for Class 2 vehicles. As for regular motorists, they would have to pay 33 pesos for Class 1, 67 pesos for Class 2, and 100 pesos for Class 3 beginning this Sunday. Well, the rainy season has officially begun here in the Philippines. Let's get more details now from ABS-CBN's resident meteorologist Ariel Rojas. Ariel, over to you.
Hi, good afternoon, Carmina. PAGASA officially declared the start of the rainy season yesterday based on observed rainfall the past days and winds from the southwest. It added that breaks in rainfall events called monsoon breaks are possible and may last for a few days to weeks. The ongoing La Nina may cause weather conditions in the coming months. However, a study showed that during La Nina, the Habagat tends to be weaker. While this year's rainy season is earlier compared to the most recent ones, it still falls within the normal period of rainy season start, which is between the second half of May and the first half of June. For today's weather, the frontal system will continue to drench Batanes, Babuyan, and Ilocos Norte. Intense thunderstorms, meanwhile, are expected this afternoon and evening in Cordillera, Cagayan Valley, Central Luzon, and the rest of Ilocos region. Thunderstorm rains will also be experienced in Calabarzon, Mindoro, and parts of Davao region, Sokcergen, and BARMM. And here in Metro Manila, afternoon and evening thunderstorm is also expected. Our kapamilyas are advised to always bring their umbrellas and or raincoats and anticipate flooding, especially here in Metro Manila, where cases in leptospirosis and dengue can spike in the coming months. Despite the rains, no weather disturbance is expected until weekend. That's the latest on the weather. This is Ariel Rojas. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Ariel. Take care and keep safe. And from there, on to some sports action. Another day, another blowout in the NBA playoffs. The Golden State Warriors dismantled the Dallas Mavericks. 112-87 in the opener of the Western Conference Finals. The Dubs limited Dallas superstar Luka Doncic to just 20 points. That's 11 below his postseason average. All five starters for the Warriors finished in double figures, led by two-time MVP Steph Curry, who had 21 points. Game 2 will be played on Saturday, still on the Warriors' home floor. Filipino-American gymnast Alea Finnegan still in cloud nine over her success in the ongoing Southeast Asian Games. Finnegan, who bagged 4 medals, says her focus now is to rest before preparing for future competitions. The 19-year-old also points out ways government can improve its support for athletes.
I definitely think the gym that these girls train at, I definitely think there could be an upgrade there. You know, these girls train in constant, you know, heat, and it's really impressive what they're able to do, you know, with what they have. And I would really like to see some improvements in that area.
Meantime, the Philippines continues its impressive run in the SEA Games. Manila now has 38 golds, maintaining its third spot in the medal tally, just below Thailand and Vietnam. Revolutionary TV and digital channel Pinoy Interactive Entertainment, or PAI, is set to give viewers a digital upgrade from their traditional viewing experience. PAI will start airing on May 23rd with content designed for the young and young at heart alike. ABS-CBN COO of Broadcast, Corey Vidanis, said the programs at PAI are interactive so viewers can participate through their TV and mobile devices. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.